Hey guys, welcome to our first ever Filibites, a little mini episode of Filibustered. We're just going to kind of talk about some things that have happened in the last couple weeks and some things that we're looking forward to. The main focus of our first Filibite is going to be the first presidential debate, which happened, what day was that?
It was Monday.
Monday.
Yep.
Just a little bit ago. Hopefully everyone watched it, or at least saw some of the highlights from it. Pat, I know you probably watched the whole thing.
I did. I watched it with Lance Bass at
Park
Street
Tavern.
Oh,
that's right. You did go to that. Yeah.
It was something.
Did he sing?
No.
Okay.
They just kind of propped him up on the stage for a bit. He pretended that he was really into politics, and then he got off the stage.
All right.
It was something. You could get your picture with him. I did not, because I felt bad that I didn't actually know who he was until like a year ago.
I feel like of everyone, you should know about Lance Bass.
Because of how into pop
In
music
you
I
were.
Am. How,
yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, obviously.
Yeah.
Obviously.
Yeah, but actually I think many of our viewers, or whoever is going to listen or watch this, must have seen it. It was the most watched presidential debate in history.
Yes.
84 million viewers.
Yeah. Did you play the drinking game with it?
No, I probably would have gotten alcohol poisoning.
I'll be honest, I did, and I was on Team Trump for it. He used the word tremendous a lot of times.
Yep.
It was fun.
It's a standby word for him. It's one of the few big ones that he knows.
Yeah, multi-syllable.
Braggadocious.
I do want to start by asking you, I know this is going to be a tough question for you, but what did Trump do well in the debate?
From an objective standpoint,
yeah,
nothing.
Okay.
But you know, that question is, you know, kind of multi-layered, because you could look at it from a few different angles. You know, if you're just rating this debate on its own as a completely objective bystander, he totally imploded, lost his cool, fell apart. But the bar for Trump in the public's eye, and then especially for his own supporters, is incredibly low. And what they were really looking for was a Trump who could at least hold himself together and present himself in a way that would make him at least seem presidential and even-tempered. And for about 15, 20 minutes there, he kind of did. But it very quickly fell apart. The man effectively brought, you know, 20 minutes of material to a 90-minute show, and it just didn't go well for him, especially because Hillary didn't really have to do anything. She got to just stand back and watch him.
That was actually going to be my next question for you. I think it seems pretty conclusive that everyone is saying Hillary, by a landslide, won the first debate.
Mm-hmm.
My question is, did she really do that well, or just was it comparatively she was up against Trump?
Yeah, a lot of it is she was just up against Trump. And that's not to say Hillary's a bad debatist. She's actually very, very, very good at that stuff. You know, we haven't seen her do it in quite some time because she's been kind of in the bureaucratic field as of late, you know, until this election. But she's actually very, very skilled in those situations, especially when a moderator is going to ask very technical questions. You know, if you ask a question about an obscure subject, especially a foreign policy one, Hillary Clinton's going to run circles around anybody that you put up there. She didn't even have to do that for this debate. Hillary is not especially great, though, when it comes to off-the-cuff stuff, as I'm sure people have noticed, especially, you know, when Donald opened the window for her numerous times that debate, and she felt like she had to say something. There was definitely some stilted language in there. So that's not really her strong point, but again, he was just so bad, it didn't need to be.
Before we get into some of the specifics of the debate and also some things that have happened in the last few days here, what would you say, if you had to pick one thing, what was your favorite moment from the debate?
Honestly, I think my favorite moment was Trump trying to wiggle out of the birther controversy while also, like, doubling down on the birther controversy.
That's kind of been his strategy lately, it seems like.
Yeah.
He's trying to distance himself from things, but also doubling down at the same time.
Right, and I don't think he understands that you can't say that you're against something without refuting your previous statements when you were for it. He's so caught up in never being wrong that even when he wants to change his positions, he refuses to indicate that the previous position was wrong, if that makes any sense.
Nothing about the debate made sense.
Well, the man, you know, with the Iraq War stuff, he is completely incapable of saying, I supported it initially. That was incorrect. That was a bad decision. I'm against the war now. Instead, he has to look back and try to deny that he was ever in support of the war.
Which, that's such a strange thing that he's trying to do, because I think he had a lot of opportunities for some humility, and actually I think it would have been much more beneficial if he would have been able to admit, I've been wrong about things before,
right,
but I've changed my mind, because even Hillary has done that. I mean, that
she has.
I think that, like, especially the war in Iraq, I think that for whatever reason, that seems to be sort of this huge measure of judgment for politicians now, mm-hmm, whether they were for or against the war in Iraq. And does that matter as much as we put on it? I mean, is it better to have supported it at one time and then realize that was the wrong choice? Or is it better to just defend blatantly that I never supported the war in Iraq?
You know, if you truly never supported it, you know, that would be a very great feather in your cap, you know, a la Senator Sanders. Trump was very much in support of it at the beginning. Now he's trying to deny that he ever was.
As were a lot of politicians.
Yes.
Most politicians, I think,
right,
in the moment were in. I mean, Bernie Sanders, I think, is one of the few that can actually say he was never
exactly
in support. Yeah.
Yeah. And honestly, you know, it's, I don't want to say that it's forgivable to ever have been in support of the war in Iraq, but it's understandable when you had the entire executive branch of the United States government effectively lying through their teeth as to evidence of weapons of mass destruction and connections to the 9/11 attacks, et cetera, et cetera. You know, even the one that we were supposed to be able to trust in the Bush administration, Colin Powell, you know, coming out with this stuff. And he was the Iraq expert. You know, he was Supreme Allied Commander of the Desert Storm invasion. Or actually, I might have that backwards. Was Schwarzkopf the Supreme Allied Commander? Or was it Powell? It was Powell. Schwarzkopf was just involved. I'm probably going to be totally wrong. Maybe people will correct me in the comments. Watch the episode. Say things in the comments. but, you know, Powell was very much seen as the expert on the Middle East. And when he came out and before the United Nations laid out the case for the war in Iraq, that's really, I think, when many American politicians, including Hillary Clinton, came around to, fine, the evidence is there, let's do this. Turns out, not so much.
Yeah. Before we do get into the specifics, one last broad question about the debate. Who do you think has more stamina, Donald Trump or Hillary Clinton?
Objectively, Trump might have more stamina in the just absolute definition of stamina. He can probably stand up there longer and shout longer and be obnoxious longer than Hillary ever could. But as far as keeping it together, staying on point, keeping a solid message, and actually, you know, being an even-tempered politician, I think Hillary has him beat hands down on that. So physical stamina, yeah, I'm sure Trump might be able to beat her in a foot race or something.
Yeah.
But anywhere else, I think it's pretty clear.
I will say, I mean, I was very impressed with the way Hillary did handle herself, especially having, I think it would have been very easy for people to attack her for the pneumonia scare or whatever that was, whatever that ends up being. But I mean, she clearly is someone that seemed like they were in good health and was able to
right,
be confident for an hour and a half.
Right. And also in the end, like, yeah, she's still a 68-year-old lady.
Yeah.
And I know a lot of people are pointing to, like, her, you know, sort of fainting a little bit at that 9/11 memorial. And I really just don't understand it. Like, any other 68-year-old human being in direct sunlight having to take a break, people would be like, okay, yeah, well, that's a 68-year-old person.
Yeah.
Maybe they need to take a break. Hillary Clinton, you know, it's a federal case.
Yeah. All right. Well, to get into some specifics, where would you like to start with either what's happened recently or stuff from the debate?
I would like to talk about the results of the debate a little bit, especially on national polling. You know, going into the debate, Hillary Clinton was not doing especially well. You know, Trump has never been able to have a lead on her in national polls, but the gap had narrowed. Hillary was polling, kind of on average, according to Nate Silver, Real Clear Politics, and the New York Times, Hillary had been polling nationally about 2 to 3 points ahead of Trump in the run-up to the debate. And typically, debates don't have that much of an impact on national polling, but this one very much has. We see Hillary Clinton starting to pull back ahead in Florida, Nevada, evening the race in North Carolina, catching up in Ohio and Iowa. So the Trump camp should be very, very, very nervous about what's happening with this debate. One, because it's really, really impacting polling results, which isn't necessarily typical. Two, it's the opposite of what we expect to see in the first debate. Usually the non-incumbent party candidate does not do very well in the first debate. And in this case, the incumbent party candidate totally knocked it out of the park. And we have two more contests coming up where Trump is not going to do well, or the Trump camp. The first is the vice presidential debate. Mike Pence does not have the charisma or the command of the English language or the general amiability or even at all the intelligence of Tim Kaine. It's going to be a slaughterhouse. It's going to be bad for the Trump camp. And then they'll be going into, immediately afterwards, the second debate, which Trump is probably going to be better prepared for, but is a format that he has never, ever experienced, the town hall format.
Right.
Intimate audience asking specific technical questions, no podiums. You have to be able to walk around the stage and speak to an arena-style audience, and there's two moderators. Trump very much needs an audience to feed off of. He needs people to be animated and shouting and responding to his obnoxious comments. And we saw in the first debate that when that doesn't happen, he deflates and he falls apart. And I think that'll be doubly evident when he doesn't have that podium, when he doesn't have that specific set microphone, when he can't just plant his feet and do his thing. And vice versa, this is the format that Hillary does much better in. She prefers small crowds. She prefers technical questions that she might not have been told about beforehand, because that's when her immediate command of fact and technical knowledge shines through. This is where Hillary gets to really be that technocratic micromanager that she has painted herself to be. So the Trump camp should be very, very nervous about these next two debates. Third one, back to a typical debate format with a generally conservative moderator. They might be better off with that one, but these next two should be causing some nervous jitters in the Trump camp.
Well, I do think the town hall will be kind of an interesting test for both campaigns, because I think it's an opportunity for both of them to sort of humanize themselves a little bit and connect with people on a level they haven't been able to. And mm-hmm. I actually, I'm a little less optimistic for Hillary going into the town hall. I think she'll probably end up doing very well, but I'm cautious about it because I think she's struggled to kind of show her humane side. Clearly, she's an effective leader. She's made very tough decisions. But I think part of the reason that we see a lot of millennial supporters kind of struggling to really rally behind her is she seems very, very much like a career politician and doesn't mm-hmm. quite have that emotional connection that you expect from a leader.
Right.
Trump does not necessarily have that either, but I think
he's... Or think he needs it.
Yeah. He's definitely been able to fire up people, but it's mostly just his own supporters at this point.
Exactly.
So I think that'll be very interesting. I could also see Trump totally turning against the audience in that, and that would be a disaster for him.
It would be very bad.
Yeah.
Because, there is nothing that Trump can do at this point to shake his ardent supporters.
Yeah.
They're not leaving.
No.
But there's simply not enough of them for him to win this election. He needs to be polling moderate non-voters into his camp, and he needs to be polling millennials into his camp, and he just simply isn't. The town hall, yes, Hillary is going to need to do her best to humanize herself, which I think she'll do. People have spoken. I haven't had the chance to see her in a format like this before. Outside of video clips, that sort of thing. But people really do talk about going to these events where she is speaking to a small crowd and taking questions, and have said that she really does shine through in this format. Once you get her away from the script and out from behind the podium and into a less center stage spotlight video cameras on you situation, she becomes the Hillary Clinton that her friends and her aides talk about, this kind of, you know, bright, technocratic, very, very in tune with a wide base of factual knowledge, but also friendly, personal, kind of grandmotherly figure. So it really is the perfect storm for her to do exactly that, while Trump has presumably another meltdown.
I just love it when you talk dirty election politics to me. I do want to kind of quickly go through some very specific points from the debate in our last couple minutes here. I think we have to talk a little bit about the tax return issue, I think, which kind of became one of the largest things a lot of people walked away with from the debate. Trump ultimately making kind of an off-the-cuff underhanded comment that it was smart of him to avoid paying taxes. Which Hillary didn't. I kind of have to give her credit. She didn't really jump on it in the debate. I think she was actually very smart in a lot of ways. That a lot of the comments Trump made, I think it would have been easy for her to kind of call attention to those. But hopefully she kind of realized what she was able to do and just kind of let him implode on his own and make these comments. And then the media and the public would do the rest from there.
Yep.
So I think she was smart that way.
And I do think she learned that from watching the Republican primary debates, where Trump can say these outlandish things that make no sense, that should totally be shooting himself in the foot, but he thrives off of that immediate reactionary response. You know, when he says something stupid and you go to correct it, that's when he can make his faces and he can roll his eyes and he can do his thing or whatever the hell that is. People just listening probably didn't understand whatever I just did there. You know, but that's he thrives on
that
immediate.
We'll just make that the picture for the episode. So everyone gets to see the face that you just made.
That's when when you make that immediate emotional response to him, you know, he thrives on that. And so I think she absolutely did the right thing. Whenever he said something stupid, she just let it slide. Yeah. Just let the audience make up their mind. And he was expecting a response and he didn't get it.
Yeah. I do want to ask though, the issue of, you know, not releasing tax returns. I think actually earlier today, there was some tax returns uncovered from, I believe, 1995. How big of an issue should this be?
Well, I think objectively, like just the issue itself, person hasn't paid income taxes. Maybe it's not that big if it wasn't in the context of the presidential election. Because there's a few things at stake here. One is that, you know, Trump is just wanting to hide this and doesn't want the American public to know. And that's weird because every major candidate has released their tax returns since like the mid-70s or something. So it's very strange that he doesn't want people to see it. Two, you know, it does speak to the fact that Trump likes to tout that he's this incredible businessman who never makes mistakes and everything he does is a wonderful, gilded, gold-plated success. And as what we're seeing is that it's totally not. You know, he's been bankrupt numerous times, and one of the reasons that he hasn't paid income taxes in many, many years is that he has taken a loss on many, many, many business ventures. But also, I think, is what really is at stake here is the fact that we're able to see this multi-billionaire who hasn't paid taxes. And while it might be totally legal that he hasn't paid taxes, it really highlights what needs to change in this country. And I think he knows that. I think he knows that the American people, even if he did it legally, aren't going to respond well to a billionaire who hasn't paid income taxes in X number of years.
Yeah.
Even if he did it 1,000% legally, using every loophole out there, all they're going to see is not, oh, this is a smart, shrewd businessman. They're going to see a tax system and a system that favors just the wealthy that needs to be changed.
And I think that, again, talking about kind of missed opportunities in the debate, I think that that would have been a great opportunity for Trump to use that to point to a flawed system instead of calling it smart.
Right.
Or however, which
that's a nuance that Trump isn't going to pick up on.
Yeah, unfortunately for his campaign, yeah. And then actually, just as we kind of get to know this, one other small interesting thing that kind of happened from the tax return debate, almost, I believe, within an hour of the debate in an interview, Trump flat out said that he didn't say that.
Yeah.
Which is, I feel like there's been a lot of that going on in this campaign. Maybe not just maybe not just from Trump, but what is this phenomenon of politicians being able to say, "I didn't say that," and it actually, in a lot of ways, seems like an effective response because he didn't have to answer a question then.
Yeah,
the internet was able to be upset that he said that, but that's kind of the end of it then. Like no one is holding him accountable beyond that to
his supporters
answer the question.
Won't. His supporters won't hold him accountable. I think much of the American public will, but his supporters won't, because he can say, "I didn't say that," and then twist it into some kind of like, "my microphone was broken. The moderator was against me. Hillary was signaling him by scratching her nose." Like, whatever tinfoil hat.
I love that video. Yeah,
whatever tinfoil hat nonsense has been cooked up by the people who believe that fluoride is controlling their brains is just going to fly with his crowd. And he can totally say, "I didn't say that," and then just move on. And they'll accept that. But I think many, many people and a lot of undecided voters are seeing that and just thinking, this is crazy. And honestly, I don't really know if it's a phenomenon amongst candidates in general. I think it's just Trump that's doing that, and he's normalizing the practice, very unfortunately.
Yeah.
He might also not understand how, you know, Twitter and recording devices work.
I do want to ask just one last question before we wrap this up. Just in some sort of fairness to Donald Trump, which not that he necessarily deserves that, but obviously him complaining that the microphone, that there was problems with that, things like that, obviously that is all nonsense. But from an objective standpoint, just in terms of the moderator, because this is something that may actually come up in other debates too, do you think that we should expect a moderator to be totally fair, or do you think that the moderator was unfair in any way?
Well, there's two things. One, in regards to the microphone, the commission did state afterwards that in the arena, Trump's mic cut out a couple times, but I don't really think that matters because at home, everyone heard him loud and clear.
Yeah.
And all the people in that arena are already decided. Most of them are members of either campaign. Doesn't matter.
Or Mark Cuban.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Who's Mark Cuban again?
Just billionaire that apparently hates Donald Trump.
Okay.
Yeah.
But as far as the moderator goes, you know, I think the moderator was fair. I don't think fact-checking people is at all unfair, especially when it's such blatant stuff as Trump supporting the war in Iraq and then saying, "I never did that."
Right.
You know, that's totally fair game. And you know, I've seen a lot of conservatives complain about the number of times that Lester Holt interrupted Donald Trump, and that was simply because Donald Trump just ignored the rules of the debate, 100%.
Yeah.
Wouldn't let things move on, overblew his time limits consistently and constantly, frequently interrupted Hillary, when for the most part Hillary waited her turn to speak. Exactly. So I don't think there was really anything unfair at all, unless, of course, you know, you're of the opinion that anything that is anti-Trump is inherently unfair.
Which seems to be the belief that he's trying to create.
Right. Now. So I don't think things were unfair at all. And I think this is, again, another reason he's going to struggle in the town hall debate. Because, you know, when you are done talking in the town hall debate, you go back to your stool and you sit down. You can't just, you know, jump up again and interrupt people and, you know, blow over your time limits and be a jerk. Because it's not just standing behind that podium. Again, it's a physical presentation as well.
Absolutely. Well, I think that's probably a good place to wrap up our first Filibyte. Obviously, a lot of exciting things happening in the next couple weeks, and it seems like every single day there's new things coming out about this election that make things just a little bit more interesting. I want to thank Brian Downey for filming, recording, editing, Wind Beneath Our Wings, that sort of thing, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah. And Pat, thank you. I don't think I introduced you at the beginning of this. But
it's okay.
It's all right.
I like to think people
I
know who I am.
I didn't introduce myself either. So anybody watching this, I would assume, already knows who we are. So we'll, I'm Griffin Browning.
And I'm Pat Deering. But before we do finish up, you know, because I'm assuming this will get out there a couple of times before this particular show, just want to let everybody know that if you are here in the Columbus, Ohio area, election night, you can come to the first ever live episode of Filibusted at the Backstage Bistro at Shadowbox, where we will be covering the election results as they come in. We'll have some, you know, local talent there with us as well, and I think it'll be a pretty great time.
Yeah, hopefully we still have an election by then.
Right.
Who knows what's going to happen.
We could have all have moved to Mars with Elon Musk.
That's true, yeah, which is something we'll cover hopefully soon on an episode of Filibust. All right, well, thank you guys for tuning in. That's going to do it for our first episode of Filibytes, and be on the lookout for more of these and also future episodes of Filibusted. We'll see you guys next time.
Thanks, guys. Toddlers should not have guns.